The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
I help people every day to improve their health. Sometimes they've had lifelong issues or not fully recovered after a stressful event. The doctors have often run out of ideas. My name is Kevin Davis. Our bioresonance system starts with an automated full body scan. It's simply the quickest way to shine a light on what's going on inside, with treatments during the same session. For the latest health tech at the best price, visit biohealthtech.co.uk today and make us your first choice for a healthier you.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. My name is Kirsten Hartwig and this is the Herbal Medicine Show. In today's show, we have news that Coca-Cola are thinking about adding cannabis to their soft drinks, about how breastfeeding can help avoid overweight children, about getting enough iron, and whether aspirin is essential. We also have a fascinating interview with the writer and director of a new, and I think, important film about baby blues, followed by herbal and self-help tips for this sensitive condition. In the garden, we look at rose hips and what to use them for, and this week's guest in the garden is Dr. Francis Watkins. Welcome to your weekly dose of plant power. In the news this week, I found these interesting stories. First, one about cannabis and Coca-Cola. The name Coca-Cola was coined back in 1885 for a syrup containing two herbal medicine ingredients, extracts of coca leaves and caffeine-containing cola nuts. Exactly how much actual cocaine the original formula contained is hard to say, but the drink undeniably contained some cocaine until the recipe was changed in 1929. Coca-Cola still contains caffeine, and now rumor has it that the company is experimenting with adding a new drug, namely cannabis. The firm has not commented on this allegation, merely saying that they are closely watching the growth of interest in non-psychoactive cannabidiol as an ingredient in functional wellness beverages. Cannabidiol, or CBD, is an active constituent of cannabis which can help reduce anxiety, inflammation, pain and stress. CBD is not responsible for the psychoactive effect of the herb, which is slowly being legalized for recreational use in the US and Canada. Coca-Cola stresses that it is only interested in making recovery drinks to treat pain, not in getting users high. Breastfeeding may help prevent babies becoming overweight, concludes a Canadian healthy infant study on whether there could be a link between baby feeding practices, the health of the gut flora, and child obesity. Over 1,000 mothers and babies were studied between 2009 and 17, and it was concluded that babies who were exclusively formula fed had an increased risk of being overweight compared to babies that were exclusively breastfed from birth. Aspirin advice. A major study in the US and Australia has cast doubt over the common practice of advising everyone of retirement age to take aspirin every day. Although there are proven benefits for people taking aspirin daily after suffering heart attack or stroke, the trial found no benefit for healthy people. On the contrary, aspirin increased the risk of stomach bleeding. Professor John McNeil from Monash University said, "It means millions of healthy older people around the world who are taking a low-dose aspirin without a medical reason may be doing so unnecessarily, because the study showed no overall benefit to offset the risk of bleeding. Anybody who has been taking low-dose aspirin for a long time is advised not to stop overnight, however, but to consult their doctor about withdrawing the drug." These findings are very interesting from a herbal medicine perspective, as aspirin originates from two salicylic acid-containing medicinal herbs, namely willow and meadowsweet. However, the herbs also contain other active ingredients that are known to be good anti-inflammatories that can help relieve pain, reduce fever, and heal stomach ulcers. Women should check their iron reserves, according to an analysis of Iron and Health carried out by the UK government's Scientific Advisory Committee on Nutrition. It indicated that 21% of women aged between 19 and 34 had below recommended levels of ferritin, which is the compound that helps us store iron in the body. Our bodies don't produce iron, but leafy green vegetables, cabbages, and greens such as parsley contain iron and vitamin C, which helps iron absorption. When you boil your greens, though, the vitamin C is released into the cooking water, so either eat your greens raw or use the cooking water to make a sauce, stew, or a soup to avoid throwing away the vitamin C. You're listening to UK Health Radio. My name is Kirsten Hartwig, and this is the Herbal Medicine Show. Today I have the great pleasure of talking to Nessa Rafter, who directed the film Early Days, which is a film about postnatal depression. And that is a subject I'm sure many women would be very interested in knowing more about. So I'm very pleased to meet you, Nessa. Hi.
Hello, I'm pleased to meet you too. Thank you for calling.
It's quite a heavy subject, postnatal depression, and it's not something that is normally talked about. So I saw the trailer for the film, and I think you portray it extremely well. And it also left me thinking about my own childbirth and the experience and the days and months that followed, and how life-changing it is to have a baby. Mm-hmm. You think the pregnancy is the end, but it's actually the beginning of a completely new phase that nothing can prepare you for, I think. And perhaps if people knew how hard it can be, there'd be less babies born, so it's probably a good secret to keep. But you're...
Yeah, well, this is sort of the big question, I suppose, that I asked myself and all of us involved in the film talked about quite a lot, which was, why don't more people talk about this huge, heavy subject? And to a degree, I suppose, we're protecting people who haven't had babies yet and maybe women who are pregnant. But ultimately, I felt that actually having this conversation, really discussing all of the things that can happen, is for the best, because you're not saying it's not worthwhile doing it. You're saying that if you're struggling emotionally, mentally, physically, that's all very normal, and lots of other people will have shared that experience, and there will be people that you can talk to and connect with about all of that.
It's really beautiful what you're saying, that getting the message out is, you know, talking about it actually eases the burden. And when you're standing there feeling completely isolated and not understanding anything, knowing that this is normal can be a great help in itself, because the main problem with postnatal depression is actually recognizing that it's happening.
There are so many variations of different mental health problems you can suffer from, both before having your baby, during pregnancy, and around the time of childbirth and afterwards. And actually, the main thing that I think is really important for us to do is talk about all the different things that you can be feeling. And once you start opening that up, that's the road to recovery.
Yeah. That is exactly it. And you have been very brave, because I think, as I understand, it's based on your own story, the film.
Yeah,
and
it is.
I think that makes it even more authentic, that it's not something you have just heard about, but you have actually felt it on your own body.
Those early days and those early weeks are really challenging. You're staying up all night after having been through childbirth, which has potentially been quite traumatic.
Yeah.
And you've been pregnant for 9 to 10 months, so you're physically exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, it's enough to tip anybody over the edge. That was one of the most important things I wanted to get across in the script, was this thing that it's not just a binary opposite of I'm happy or I'm not happy. That's not how life works. That's not how anything in life works, but particularly this moment in life, which is so all-encompassing. And it's one of the most important times in anybody's life, because you've brought another human into the world. It's huge. It's as big as it gets. To sort of reduce it down to you're happy or you're not happy makes absolutely no sense. You should be able to say, yes, I'm happy. Yes, I feel grateful. Yes, every instinct in my body wants to protect this little human. But at the same time, my sense of self has just been offended. And I'm struggling with some anxiety. And those things can all exist at once. And to try and deal with them all separately is hard. But you've the first step is admitting that it's difficult, I think.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And I can definitely identify with it, because I remember the first time someone didn't call me my name, but called me somebody's mother. What? Who? Oh, me.
I know. It's gone from the you show to the baby show. So you're walking around in your show for your life thinking, this is all about me. And then all of a sudden, no, it's not about you anymore.
Exactly.
You are the supporting actor in your own TV show. And the baby is the star. And that's great as well.
Yeah,
it's a new phase of life. But it also takes a little time to get used to.
So tell me a bit more about the film and who have you got in it?
Yeah, so I was really lucky to get Mainey McCoy to play me in the film. Mainey and I had got to know each other during pregnancy. And so when we first had our babies, we were neighbours. We lived around the corner. And we became very close during that time because obviously we were going through a lot of the same things. And I was aware of her work and I knew she was really talented. And then as I developed the script, I worked up the courage to eventually say to her, would you be interested in reading this and potentially being in this? And luckily she agreed and she really liked the script and she came on board and she is phenomenal in it. So I had Adrian Bauer playing my partner. And he's an incredible actor. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people will know his name. He was in Teachers. He was in The Last Kingdom. He's doing Shakespeare at the moment in The Globe. And he's just so talented. I sort of had him in my head that he would make a really, really good person to play that part. And when he agreed to be on board, I was absolutely delighted. I knew it would work quite well with Mamie as well. And they were so comfortable around each other. You completely believe their dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just so natural, and he has the ability to bring this boyish charm as well as that kind of vulnerability that a new dad has. And I think that was the thing that was most important with that character, because you want him to be so in such a different place emotionally from the female character, but you also want to understand that he's going through a difficult journey too.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was that was fantastic. And then we had Peter Weiss playing Kate's dad. Kate's the main character, which is just outrageous. You know, he's this incredible British actor who's been around for, 20 odd years. He's in a bunch of my favourite films and TV shows. And sort of, all of a sudden he's walking onto my set and he's chatting to me and he's going and playing my dad. How did this happen? This is really, really, really strange, but incredible. And he's just a dream to work with as well. He's so easy.
It sounds like the recipe for a really good film. So you're showing it at its premieres at the Raindance Film Festival.
Yes.
But some of us, like me, won't be able to go to that. So where can I see it?
Because we're showing at festivals sort of all the time. We're going to be at Raindance, like you said, in September. We're also going to be in the San Francisco Irish Film Festival around that time. We're going to be showing it in Aesthetica in York in November, in Kerry in Ireland in October. But we update our social media all the time. On Twitter, we're at Early Days Film. We have a website, which is www.earlydaysfilm.com. We keep that updated all the time with any new festivals that we're going to be playing at. And we really want to find a way to make this available to a lot of people. So if you keep an eye on all of our social media, then you will hear about the updates and we will let everybody know.
Excellent. I'll certainly do that, and I'll put it on the UK Health Radio website as well so people can keep up to date there. So there's no chance of seeing it on YouTube anytime soon, I can understand.
Probably not soon, but eventually perhaps.
Yeah, because as we both know, nursing mothers don't get out much. So
well, exactly.
Things have to come to them.
Absolutely. And it's short. It's only 12 minutes. So it's something that, you know, when it is available online, will be something very easy for people to watch at home. And I mean, they might find it a little bit emotional if they're going through that time themselves. But I also think that there'll be something hopefully in there that will make them see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. I know you're not going to tell me the ending, but I can hear from what you're saying and from talking to you now. You're still alive and you sound very cheerful and your life sounds amazing. So that's an example to us all.
The thing that I would say is that I think that although that time in your life is incredibly intense and can feel very difficult, there is beauty in that. There is something about that time that when you look back on it, you will realize that it was something that you're really glad that you went through, because it's made you who you now are, and your bond with your baby will be that bit stronger in the end because you've been through it. It won't last forever. Whatever you're feeling will not last forever. You will get through it. And in the end, I mean, I made a film out of it, and I've, you know, been so lucky to be able to do something creative as a result of a difficult time in my life. But there are all sorts of ways to turn pain and difficulty into beauty. So I would always hold that close to your heart if you're struggling.
That's a beautiful message and so true. Well, thank you very much, Nessa, for talking to me today. And I look forward to seeing the film and sharing it with everyone I know.
Great. Fantastic. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
I see this world has made you sad. Some people can be bad. Things they do, the things they say. But baby, I'll wipe away those bitter tears. I'll chase away those restless fears. Turn your blue skies into gray. Why worry? There should be laughter after pain. There should be sunshine after rain. These things have always been the same. So why worry now? Why? Get down, I turn to you, and you make sense of what I do. I know it isn't hard to say, but baby, just when this world seems mean and cold, our love comes shining red and gold, and all the rest is by the way. Why worry? There should be laughter after pain. There should be sunshine after rain. These things have always been the same. So why worry now? Why worry?
As is evident from Nessa's film and personal experience, and mine too, postnatal depression is much more common than it is talked about. It can be debilitating and isolating to become a mother, however precious and amazing it also is. It takes a village to raise a child, as the African proverb so rightly says. But in modern Western society, being a mother can be a lonely place with everyone else too far away, emotionally or geographically, to share the wonder and miracle of a new life. And as Nessa said, when you add exhaustion, blood loss, inexperience and hormonal change, you have a recipe for baby blues. It often starts 3 to 4 days after birth, coinciding with the fall in estrogen levels. Common triggers include a difficult birth, medical intervention, separation from the baby, a stressful pregnancy, lack of family or community support, isolation and juggling work, home and childcare. Or it can be triggered by simple sleep deprivation. And the more stressed and exhausted the mother becomes, the harder it is for the baby to eat, sleep, repeat, as babies are supposed to. The symptoms can be anything from tearful exhaustion and feeling unable to look after the baby, to panic attacks, phobias, and psychotic behavior. And baby blues can last from weeks to years. An astute GP, a helpful health visitor, and a thoughtful partner are the first lines of defense. And apart from that, there's a lot you can do yourself to ease and cope with the symptoms. My own wise independent midwife said, sleep when the baby sleeps. And that was such good advice because I soon realized that if I didn't, I never got enough sleep. So instead of walking around like a zombie, I went to bed ultra early. In fact, I still do. It's also helpful to have breaks away from the baby, time to switch off and remember that you are a daughter as well as a mother. Getting out of the house is also a must, as is talking to other mothers who can feel like the only people who can really relate to your situation. The NCT is a good organization to join. Going on holiday with the baby is a good way to get away from any other tasks and a chance to remember what a precious gift from heaven a child is. As well as getting in touch with the crew behind early days and tuning into their work, you can also find support from the Association of Postnatal Illness. You can find contact details for both on the UK Health Radio website. In herbal medicine, we can help the baby blues symptoms by boosting the nervous system with nerve tonics such as St. John's wort, vervain, wood betony and oats. So having porridge with plant-based milk in the morning is a very good start. We also use herbal antidepressants like rosemary, lemon balm, milk thistle and borage oil. Borage oil is also called starflower oil, and it's a very soothing adrenal support absorbed through the skin. Sometimes sedatives like passionflower, skullcap and lavender are called for. We also use herbs like chasteberry, known as Vitex agnus castus, and sarsaparilla to address hormonal imbalance, as well as essential oils like jasmine, clary sage and ylang ylang in the bath or in an oil burner, or just dabbed on the wrists to soothe, uplift and nourish. Bach flower remedies like walnut, mustard and sweet chestnut can also help rebalance the finer energy fields and emotions. Of course, you could easily get stressed too trying to do all that. The intention of suggesting an array of remedies is for you to have tools to help you become more aware of what you need and what you can do to help raise yourself up from the depths, be it with the help of a holiday, a jasmine bath, a herb tea, or all those and more together.
The sun rises higher and a new day is made. world it looks beautiful, and the heart stops to wake. As water flows in the ocean, and sunlight glows on your face, you are filling up with emotion, and all is in its place. All is in its place. As you reach for an opening and you breathe in the air, the world gives you everything and a lifetime to share. As water flows in the ocean and sunlight glows on your face, you are filling up with emotion and all is in its place. All is in its place.
This week, the garden was full of herbal students who reluctantly and with a lot of jokes accepted my no-dig mulching system. I explained that it's just like taking up probiotics to improve gut flora, like crowding out the enemy. I got them to move comfrey into a bed overgrown with bindweed and thistles without removing the weeds first, but just planting the comfrey, making the weeds become part of the solution by releasing the nutrients they have absorbed from the soil as they break down underneath the dense cover of comfrey leaves. Afterwards, the beds where the comfrey had been was perfect for planting out new herbs. We also sowed seeds in trays to be planted out when the next no-dig beds are ready. And after all that, the tallest of us helped Mariano harvest grapes, while those of us too short to reach the grapes made tea. It was Frances Watkins' idea to move the comfrey. She is a wise woman. Listen to her sharing her wisdom with me. Today I have the great pleasure to welcome my friend and colleague, Frances Watkins, who is a herbalist and a PhD in herbal medicine. So welcome, Frances.
Oh, hello, Kirsten. Yes, thank you very much for inviting me today.
I'm very impressed that you have a PhD in herbal medicine.
My PhD was laboratory-based and looking at common plants, native British species, that were used in 10th century, that's early medieval, herbal formulations, and in particular that they were used for wounds healing.
That is really interesting. And when you came and helped me in the herb garden, and I must say I'm very pleased you haven't got an allotment anymore. I'm intending to profit as much as possible from that.
From my perspective, I'm a bit sad about losing my allotment, but after 8 years. But I'm more than happy to be involved with Hartwood in the herb garden.
Wonderful. So, but then you told me in one of the tea breaks that you had spent several years studying a few herbs. Like, was it a handful of herbs or two handfuls? Or how many did you get through in the lab?
In the end, I did actually study six plants. And the reason for that was that the plants that we chose, in addition to them being native species, we wanted to look at plants that hadn't had a lot of reported phytochemistry. So plants that were common, had a medicinal traditional use, but didn't have a lot of published research about the medicinal compounds.
How interesting. And what were those six plants then?
Six herbs. Yeah. Well, I'll give you the common names. So the first one is agrimony. The Anglo-Saxon name is Garclive or Garclive, and I don't speak Anglo-Saxon, so if anyone's listening out there, I do apologise if the pronunciation's not correct. the second one is a beautiful little flower, as common century, and that was in a meadow, quite sparsely populated, so I had to do quite a lot of hunting around to find the right place where there was an abundance of it before I could harvest any material.
And century is that beautiful pink flower, isn't it? So little,
it is.
Yeah, I love it.
Little tiny one. It looks as though there's no water in it. Huh? The next one was lesser burdock.
So that's three. We're halfway there then.
That's three, halfway there, yes. And our next candidate was creeping cinquefoil. Mm-hmm. And our next one was hoary plantain. I had a lot of difficulty with that one in finding two species with the flowers on, because all the local wildlife had been and eaten the flowers, probably self-medicating, as they do. But of course, you know, for research purposes, it was necessary to produce a herbarium and submit dried samples to Kew and lodge them there for future reference.
Okay.
So should anyone, you know, wish to repeat my research, then they could actually access those samples and take dried material off the plant to analyse against specimens that they collect. You would, when you're researching plants, you would pick the plants for the herbarium when they're in flower. So you can be 100% sure that the specimen that you've collected is the one that you're researching. The sixth plant, which is wood betony, and whilst it is almost non-existent in Hertfordshire, where I live, it is common in other parts of the country. Yeah, and I think of all the herbs, it is the one with the most herbal remedies listed.
How interesting. So what did you find, Frances?
Well, yes, as I said at the outset, you know, we studied six because we didn't know what we would find. And many many people have thought, looking and reading the texts, that they were of interest from a historical perspective, but they wouldn't have any medicinal use. Mm-hmm. But as herbalists, it hasn't been herbalists that have been looking at these texts previously.
I certainly know from my own practice and from experience that something like wood betony is an amazing plant. Plant not only for as an antibiotic plant, but also it calms stressful people down. It helps the immune system work by calming you, so it can work, I suppose, as part of its action. Or is that...
Yes, and I use betony with for a number of people who have anxiety.
Yeah, exactly.
I find
yeah.
it works well with them, helps to calm their nervous yeah. state. Yeah. I don't think we as herbalists use it enough. So I think that yeah. you know we could make more of in our practices today. Mm-hmm. All of the plants had some ability to inhibit the growth of the organisms found in wounds. But perhaps I was quite surprised by both agrimony and creeping cinquefoil, that those two really did perform. And it did take us a long time to get there. In that, you know, you've got to collect the plants, get permission to collect the plants, and then prepare all of the extracts before you can actually do it. So I think, you know, we were sort of into year two before I was doing the real analysis on the plants.
You must be a very patient person, Frances, to be able to, or persistent, I suppose.
It was nearly 4 years of my life, but wow. Very worthwhile. And as a result of that, I published a paper in Drug Discovery today on the importance of the medical text as potential insights for looking at new antimicrobial compounds.
How interesting. And they are, of course, very... needed now, because modern antibiotics are finding it harder and harder to deal with the kind of microbes that we're faced with because of resistance and so on. So I think it's very interesting that you have found something that was 1,000 years ago that was used when people didn't have antibiotics, but obviously they had antibiotics that just not the ones that we have today.
Well, it's the world that we live in. You know, in today's environment, it's the pharmaceuticals that have control, and native flora isn't of any interest to a pharmaceutical company, which is why these plants are so under-researched. Mm-hmm. Because why would you invest millions and millions of pounds in investigating or researching a plant that is generally available to everybody? You know, you have no intellectual property that you can protect in that respect. But more importantly, I think that what is a shame is that the knowledge of the medicinal uses of these plants has been lost.
Yes.
And that for all of us, not just as herbalists, but
exactly.
all of our neighbours,
yeah.
our families and yeah. friends, we need to be encouraging people to get back to nature,
yeah.
to be able to
yeah.
identify plants and to yeah. use some of these plants in their homes.
Yeah.
Even if it's just for coughs and colds, to start off with simple preparations that you can make in the home.
Yeah, and wouldn't
I think,
I think that's a very nice solution to the pressure that the NHS is under, that if people knew more about how to help themselves with simple remedies and simple foods and what they have in their garden or they can pick when they go for a walk, like people used to do.
Absolutely.
Then the NHS would have more resources to take care of the things that are... that where you really need to have years of training to work out what to do about it. Yeah.
And what we can do as herbalists is try to encourage and teach people that they can harvest these plants themselves and
yeah.
make their own products.
And that is certainly my calling, and I would like this show to enable people all over the world to be able to look after themselves better with
Absolutely.
Things that don't cost the earth.
For me, that was the beauty, that the research was reinforcing our traditional use of
yes.
our herbs.
Isn't that wonderful that you have proved beyond doubt that there were antibiotics before antibiotics, and that gives hope that there will be after as well, because there's, I know in the WHO at the moment there's a lot of talk about what to do about antimicrobial resistance, and yes. You may have come up with the answer, Frances.
I don't know that I've come up with the answer, but certainly for me, what this research, the sort of the summary of it all, is that our ancestors were very knowledgeable herbalists or herbal practitioners, and that even we as herbalists, as well as the wider public, need to connect more and understand more about those remedies, because I think there is a lot that we could learn from them.
Yeah, and on that encouraging note, I'm going to say thank you very much, Frances, for giving us your time and your knowledge and your wisdom. And I hope to see you soon again in the herb garden. You're listening to UK Health Radio. My name is Kirsten Hartwig, and this is the Herbal Medicine Show.
Ride life's roller coaster, take every twist and turn. From root to shoot, from bud to fruit, so much to live and learn. To the north is rolling thunder, to the south wild winds and rain. And the rose, she lifts her lovely head from the thicket and the briar. She leaves the darkness far behind, rising higher and higher. In pain and hurt and suffering, just give a helping hand. Oh, the world is large, the journey long, do your best to understand. There's much that lies unseen, unsaid, unnoticed and unknown. But every journey has an end, and in the end we all go home. And the rose, she lives her lonely from the thicket and the briar. She leaves the darkness far behind, rising higher and higher. In winter's death comes a life of spring, the fruit swells from summer's flower. In the noise of the world, hear the silence ring. Eternity blooms in the hour, and there's strength and power and vision just waiting. Darkness far behind, rising higher and higher.
The wind has been busy all week blowing apples to the ground, but there's still an abundance of berries in the hedges. Brightly coloured hawthorn, wolfberry, rosehips and rowans compete with the yellow and red shades appearing in the leaves as the cooler nights take away the green. I always pick up rosehips to make jelly or to dry or just to eat, while carefully avoiding the seeds inside. They're not poisonous, just covered in irritating hairs that can get stuck in your throat. The wild rose species belonging to the rose family Rosaceae includes the dog rose and the beach rose you can find growing alongside streams and in hedges and woods. There are over 100 different species, varying from low bushes to large shrubs. They're all edible and all have one thing in common. They have small sharp thorns, which enable wild roses to climb up through hedges, walls and trees. Rose hips have been valued as a source of nutrition and medicine for centuries. Try picking a handful and make a refreshing rose hip tea by infusing the whole hips with a mug of hot water for 10 minutes. Remember to use a filter to eliminate any seed hairs. Rose hips contain 20 times more vitamin C than oranges, and the juice is highly regarded as a tonic. They also contain carotenoids, tannins, pectin, and vitamin A, B1, and C. Eaten raw, rose hips have an intense, slightly acidic, apple-like flavor, and they're excellent served as a snack or in salads or baked in breads, after having been de-seeded and rinsed, of course. Rose hips also have a long tradition of being taken to relieve respiratory and digestive conditions, and are still thought of as excellent remedies to help improve immunity and improve energy levels, and to maintain the health of mucous membranes, enhance wound healing, and help prevent cardiovascular disease and cancer cell growth. Taking rose hip tea regularly has been shown to lower blood pressure and to regulate blood sugar and cholesterol levels. You can download a rose hip fact sheet and some fine rose recipes from the UK Health Radio website. This week's quote is by the poet, artist, printer and mystic William Blake, who was born in London in 1757, where he also passed away 70 years later in 1827. The quote comes from a letter written in 1799 to his patron, the Reverend Dr. John Trusler, who was an influential and wealthy priest, writer and publisher. Trusler had commissioned Blake to work on a series of moralistic paintings depicting subjects such as malevolence, pride and benevolence. Blake needed the work financially, but after he had submitted it, Trusler complained that Blake had focused too heavily on the fantastical. Blake explained that he had tried to follow the instructions for the designs as set out by Trusler, but that he also felt bound to follow his own inner esoteric imaginative vision. He wrote, "I feel that a man may be happy in this world, and I know that this world is a world of imagination and vision. I see everything I paint in this world, but everybody does not see alike. To the eyes of a miser, a guinea is more beautiful than the sun, and a bag worn with the use of money has more beautiful proportions than a vine filled with grapes. The tree which moves some to tears of joy is in the eyes of others only a green thing which stands in the way." We've come to the end of this week's Herbal Medicine Show on UK Health Radio. Thank you for listening, and thank you to Nessa Rafter and Francis Watkins for sharing their knowledge and insight, and to Essie Jane, Peter Firebrace and Nick Rowley for their music, and to Steve and Nick from the Heartwood production team for superb technical support. Next week, I'll be talking to medical herbalist, Canadian botanic garden owner and renowned speaker, Chantal Cabrera. Chantal would try to explain her favorite subject to me, biophilia, the love of life. I love life, although I had no idea that makes me a biophile. Please join me again next week for another dose of plant power.